This is Movies for the Blind, Episode 16, British Intelligence, Part 1.
A jolly little assignment, isn't it? Not an ounce of trouble.
Hello, and welcome to Movies for the Blind, where you can enjoy films without looking at a screen. I'm Valerie Hunter. The film we're starting here stars the legendary Boris Karloff, who's instantly synonymous with horror and monsters. Not surprising, since he was the definitive Frankenstein and the definitive mummy, and for a certain generation, the definitive Grinch. But that wasn't all there was to the former William Pratt of London. Once he made it to Hollywood after a few years in Canada, mixing manual labor with work in small theater companies, Karloff had all sorts of roles in silent films. He was one of Paul Muni's many victims in the original Scarface, a detective on British TV, Captain Hook on stage, and even Santa Claus annually at a children's hospital. And in this film, he's a dutiful butler whose loyalties you never quite figure out until the end. From 1940, this is British Intelligence. Boris Karloff and Margaret Lindsay in British Intelligence. With Bruce Lester, Leonard Mudie, Holmes Herbert, Austin Fairman. Screenplay by Lee Katz, based on a play by Anthony Paul Kelly. Dialogue director John Langan. Photography Sid Hickox. Film editor Thomas Pratt. Art director Hugh Retiker. Music H. Romheld. Boris Karloff as Valdar. Margaret Lindsay as Helena von Lormier. Bruce Lester as Frank Bennett. Leonard Mudie as James Yates. Holmes Herbert as Arthur Bennett. Directed by Terry Morse. France, 1917. A line of soldiers scrambles from a trench to battle their enemies, also running onto the nighttime battlefield as massive shells are fired around them. A bomb causes a shaft of water in a river to shoot past the soldiers crossing a bridge. Men on both sides go down amid explosions that light up the night. A tank rolls through the relentless fighting. In an Allied bunker, an officer approaches his superior.
Is it going any better, Borden? This isn't a battle, it's a slaughter.
Borden wanders to a chair and leans heavily on it.
Our men didn't have a chance. They never had, you hear me?
Steady there, boy, steady now.
But you don't understand. We planned a surprise attack, didn't we? And yet we were the ones surprised. Our men walked into a deliberate trap. The Germans knew our objective and our zero hour exactly.
He sits.
Well, I'd better call up headquarters.
The superior picks up a radio phone. At headquarters, an officer opens a box and answers the call.
Major Andrews speaking.
This is Captain Stewart, 28th Division. Our attack has been repulsed along the entire sector, sir. I have to report a complete failure.
Send in your casualty report.
Hanging up and closing the box, Andrews turns to a man who sits at a desk.
Captain Stewart reports, sir, that the 28th was beaten back, too.
The Germans must have known of our plans before our own junior officers.
He stands.
Captain Lamb.
And turns to another man.
Everything that's done here, all our orders, our entire line of campaign, they're known immediately to the enemy. For the last year, every time one of our plans has miscarried, it's been blamed on Strendler. Well, he must be caught.
But, sir, we're not exactly certain what he looks like. But we do expect some results very soon.
And until then, we are supposed to let the Germans go on learning anything and everything they please.
If you'll permit me, sir, what about Williams? He's the best spy we have.
But he's the keystone of our whole system in Germany. We can't afford to bring him back here.
We must bring him back. It's well known that Strendler is working in this vicinity. Obviously, we shall need our shrewdest operator to catch him. Williams is the man for the job. Notify Williams immediately.
Yes.
Major Andrews. Instruct Commander Phelps to have a pilot stand by to pick up Williams from behind the German lines.
Very good, sir.
Andrews leaves with Lowney. Later in another house.
Bennett. Williams will be waiting for you at the north edge of the woods outside Bamorel at 9 o'clock. He'll be wearing a white smock so that you can identify him from the air. Understand?
Yes, sir.
Good luck.
Thank you, sir.
Cheerio, Phelps.
Good night, Major.
Andrews walks out of the house.
back to headquarters.
He gets into a sidecar as his driver mounts a motorcycle, and they ride past a gardener outside an open window.
Good luck to your trip.
Thanks, sir.
Bennett and Phelps drink while the gardener prunes ivy.
A jolly little assignment, isn't it? Not an ounce of trouble.
Are you sure you want to do it, Bennett?
Of course, sir. Democracy and all that, you know.
Very well, you push off before dawn tomorrow. You follow the railroad tracks up the Selwar Valley. That'll put you above Balmoral at 9 o'clock.
Right you are, sir.
Good luck.
Thank you.
The gardener steps away and enters a shadowy barn, reaching into his pocket. He pulls out something very small as he walks to a storage bin, removing a plank of wood on top of it. He reaches inside and pulls out a homing pigeon in a cage. He takes it out of the cage and holds it with its feet up. He fits the very small thing, a folded piece of paper, under a band on one of the bird's legs. Then he lifts the bird to a window and releases it, letting it fly swiftly past the trees and through the sky. Later, a German officer enters a house to report to his superior. The superior accepts the folded piece of paper and opens it to find a handwritten message.
Message from Strandler.
He stands and reads the German message, which translates as, Lieutenant Bennett takes off at dawn for Selwar Valley to pick up Williams, British spy disguised in white peasant smock. Destroy both. S.
Notify the air circus that we'll have work tomorrow at dawn.
Pull up!
Saluting, the officer turns on his heel and walks out. Next morning, German pilots run to their biplanes and climb in. When a worker waves a flag, the planes roll across the airfield. Four German biplanes lift into the air. Meanwhile, another biplane flies low. It's piloted by Bennett, who flies past a plume of smoke from a train to scan the ground for Williams, who waits in his white smock in a field. He pretends to cut grass with a scythe as he glances up. Bennett speeds along the railroad track, but looks around the skies and finds three of the German planes in the distance. One German pilot points out Bennett to the others, and they start to dive toward him. Bennett flies on with the Germans banking and spinning his way. Firing, they come up behind him. But Bennett flies higher and barrel rolls back to come up on their tails so he can fire. He's unable to hit the Germans, who do their own evasion maneuvers and fire back. Their planes bob and weave around each other. Meanwhile, on the ground,
I've got the poor bride surrounded.
He has a blinking chance in the world.
I wonder where
Look at him flip-flopping there.
Bennett keeps trying to escape the German attack. His plane is hit. Black smoke trails from his tail.
They've got him.
The plane spirals down through the sky. As Bennett tries to keep control through smoke and fire, he's able to make a crash landing. The watching infantrymen run to him with their comrades as the plane burns. Thrown from the plane, Bennett lies on his back. The infantrymen gather around him and pull him away. Later, at Mornay Base Hospital, Bennett recovers in bed through March, April, May, and June. A nurse walks past his bed, while another nurse tucks in his blankets.
I'll make sure the letter to your mother is posted before I leave. This is Arthur Bennett, 30 Cumberland Terrace, London.
Please, don't go away, Helena.
I've got to, Frank. You've got to go to sleep. Come on, now close your eyes.
Helena covers them with her hands, then caresses his cheeks.
But won't you come back?
No.
Why, Helena?
I can't explain. Keep your eyes closed.
You know, Helen, I think I'm falling in love with you.
I'm afraid you're talking yourself into something. Try and go to sleep, please.
Again, she covers his eyes and caresses his one cheek. Then she sits, gazing at him as he lies before her with his eyes closed. She kisses his cheek tenderly, then leaves. Berlin. A German officer opens two grand office doors and strides past a guard. He escorts Helena, who wears civilian clothes, into the office, where she's greeted by two other officers.
Fräulein von Larbe.
Herr Baron.
He bows to her.
At ease.
The other two officers turn away.
In recognition for your past services to the Vaterland, and because of the success of your mission at the English base hospital at Morney, His Imperial Majesty has ordered me to confer upon you this decoration.
It's a bracelet, which he attaches around her wrist.
This, my Fräulein, is a most distinguished honor.
I am very grateful.
You have studied these directions?
Yes, Excellency.
Repeat them.
I will proceed to Kiel and report to the commander of submarine U-53. He will conduct me to the North Irish coast. From there, I will make my way to Liverpool to Henry Thompson, who will take care of the London end.
Good. Herr Kapitän, destroy the directions.
Permission, Herr Oberst.
Bitte setzen Sie sich.
Lauschen.
She sits.
Henry Thompson is highly esteemed by the British officials. He should have no difficulty, nor arouse any suspicion in placing you in the Arthur Bennett home.
Arthur Bennett?
Yes. Anything wrong?
No, certainly not, Excellency. It's just that you startled me with the name of the new cabinet minister.
While in London, you will take your orders directly or indirectly, whichever he may choose, from Franz Strandler.
Strandler?
Fräulein questions this?
No. It's just that I thought that he was in France.
Strandler is in London, has been for several months. The British would give an entire army corps to capture him. And all the while, he's under the Sohain noses, constantly communicating with us by wireless to Zeebrugge.
I feel very proud, Herr Baron. I'm honored to be chosen to work with Strandler.
She stands.
May I ask, Excellency, what is my objective in this mission?
The objective is to deal a death blow to the Allies. Aside from Strandler, that's all any of us know. There is a new password.
Yes, Herr Baron?
Immer vorwärts.
Immer vorwärts. Always forward.
The answer? Niemals zurück.
Niemals zurück. Never backward.
Victory must be ours. We have but one objective. To win the war. Even if we have to fight the entire world. No nation, no group of nations can stop our advance. And the advance of German culture. We are destined to conquer the world. If our Kaiser is taken from us, a new leader will arise. I may not live to see it. But someday... Someday, Germany will own the world.
London. Helena rides in the back of a car with a man.
Strandler should be pleased with your placing me in the Bennett home. You've arranged things very cleverly, Mr. Thompson.
Oh, it wasn't a very difficult assignment. No one suspects me in the slightest.
But how did you convince the Bennetts that I should be in their home?
By telling them the very sad story of Frances Hawtrey. About her poor old father... and her terrible hardships, and her amazing escape from those German brutes. By the time I'd finished, I had old Bennett on the verge of tears.
Henry Thompson, aside from myself, you're the nicest spy I know.
Thank you. Now, in the Bennett home, in addition to Mr. and Mrs. Bennett, there's a brother George and a daughter, Dorothy.
Wasn't there a son?
Yes. Frank, I think his name is, but he's in France now in the Air Force. Oh, we shall be there in a moment. Nervous?
No, not at all.
The car pulls up outside a stately home. The chauffeur gets out and opens a door for his passengers. Thompson and Helena step out onto the sidewalk.
Well, I do hope you'll be happy here.
I'm sure I will. You've been so kind.
Just wait, will you?
As he escorts her to the front door... A butler with a slight limp approaches from inside the house to answer it.
Oui, monsieur.
Miss Hawtrey and Mr. Thompson to see Mr. Bennett.
But of course, monsieur, mademoiselle. Please to come in.
Smiling, he holds the door open for them as they enter.
This way, please.
He leads them into the foyer.
Permit me, monsieur.
Thank you.
He takes Thompson's coat, hat, and gloves.
You are expected by Monsieur Bennett.
Who opens double doors and enters with an officer.
Your voice. Mr. Bennett, George, may I present Miss Frances Hawtrey?
How do you do?
How do you do?
We've been expecting you. Oh, Valor, will you tell Mrs. Bennett that our guests have arrived?
At once, monsieur. Shall we go into the library?
Helena and Thompson step into the library with the officer, George Bennett, and his brother, Arthur.
Won't you sit down, Miss Hawtrey? To Thompson.
Thanks.
The visitors sit.
We're so glad you were able to come to us.
We hope you'll be very happy here.
Thank you.
I understand you've had quite a time with it in Germany.
George.
It's all right, really. I don't mind talking about it.
I think this is wonderfully kind of you, Bennett.
Not at all.
As I told you, Miss Hawtrey and her father were interned in Germany from the very beginning of the war. And they were treated like cattle.
It wasn't so bad, really, until my father was accused of being an English spy. They didn't bother to say how or what he could have spied upon. They condemned him to death anyway. On July 14th, at 8 o'clock in the morning, I saw my father dragged from his cell and shot.
Moved, Arthur turns to two women entering the room.
Maud, dear, this is Miss Frances Hawtrey. Miss Hawtrey, my wife.
How do you do? Oh, welcome, my dear. Thank you so much.
And our daughter, Dorothy.
I'm very happy to know you. You'll be a welcome addition to our family. I'll have your things sent up to your room right away.
Oh, they're still at the Savoy. You see, I couldn't convince Miss Hawtrey that you'd be really welcome. But I'm sure she understands now, don't you?
I do. Valda.
The butler limps into the library.
Oui, oui, madame.
Miss Hawtrey's luggage is at the Savoy. See that it's brought here.
At once, madame.
Valdar starts to go, but pauses and turns to a window.
Vive l'Amérique.
Everyone's attention is drawn to the music outside, where American soldiers parade through the streets past cheering crowds. Arthur looks out the window with Valdar.
They will help my poor country. Eh, Monsieur Bennett?
Yes, Valdar.
If only I could march with them, fight with them. Pardon, monsieur.
Sheepishly, Valdar leaves the library to continue his work. Helena watches him.
Valdar's case is very tragic. That bayonet wound in his cheek. He, a civilian, got that and two bullets in his leg from the Germans. His wife and baby were murdered before his eyes. Colonel Yates heard about Valdar's case, asked me to help him by giving him this job. I've never regretted it.
They all turn back to the parade.
Well, they're certainly a fine bunch of fellows.
Sad to watch them. More food for German guns. God grant they will be the last. My dear, you're quite exhausted. Let me take you to your room. Mr. Bennett, I'm so grateful. Mr. Thompson, I shan't see you again?
No. But I shall write to you and let you know how things are going in America.
Well, good luck.
Thank you.
They shake hands.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
And Helena leaves with Arthur's wife.
Well, I must run along. My trunks aren't packed yet and the boat train leaves at 7.
Well, have a good trip, Thompson.
Thank you, I shall. And good luck to you both.
Thanks a lot.
Look after Miss Hawtrey.
Thompson walks out.
Fine man, Thompson.
Later, Valdar carries Helena's suitcases into her room as she rests on a chaise longue.
Pardon, mademoiselle. Night takes so long.
Not at all.
She watches him set the suitcases down.
If mademoiselle will permit, I am very happy she stay here.
Thanks.
Something else? Some sandwich, perhaps?
No, thank you.
Very good.
He turns and limps to the door as she keeps watching.
Valdar.
Maybe, mademoiselle.
She stands.
Mr. Bennett was telling me that you too are a victim of German cruelty.
Ah, mademoiselle. When I think what they have done to my country, my wife, my baby, I...
You certainly have every right to feel bitter, but don't you think that there might be people in Germany who feel equally bitter toward the Allies? Toward us?
We do not kill women and babies.
No, but the Germans might feel that anything warrants victory.
He stares at her, then demurs.
If mademoiselle should need anything, you have only to push the bell at this table.
He picks it up.
I will come at once. Oh, and if mademoiselle will remember, always to push the bell with a forward motion. It will be more easy. It is somewhat stuck. Please to remember, always forward.
She stiffens and steps closer to him.
Always forward, did you say?
Oui, mademoiselle.
She takes the bell.
Odd sort of a bell, isn't it?
No. Mademoiselle perhaps has had experience with a bell that works some other way?
No, never any other way. Never backward.
Taking back the bell from her, he stares at her gravely and intently.
Helene von Lohbier.
And you?
Karl Schiller, servant of the Fatherland.
Baron Kugler told me of you.
It would be well if Baron Kugler had told you not to show sympathy for Germany as you did with me just now.
You're right.
Even when we talk like this, always I remain Valka, the servant. The only way to be someone you are not is to be that person always, even in the presence of friends.
But tell me, Schiller.
Valda.
Valda. When may I meet Franz Strindler?
That I cannot answer.
But where is he?
I do not know. He trusts no one. My orders are received and my reports sent by another who will transmit them to Strindler.
But I'm so anxious to meet him. His work, his methods, a genius.
No. A symbol of blind duty.
Or a complete patriot.
Perhaps. But he has no soul, no conscience, nothing. He'd kill you or me for duty. I don't know, was it?
Bowing to her, he again limps to the door. She watches him open it and leave. Downstairs, Valdar answers the front door, where two men wait.
Come in, Colonel.
How do you do, Valdar?
Carrying a portfolio, Yates leads the other man inside.
Merci, monsieur.
Valdar accepts their hats and gloves and a cane.
You are expected by Monsieur Bennett in the library.
He opens the door to it, and Arthur looks up.
Hello, Yates. You're right on time.
These have all been checked.
He opens the portfolio and takes out an envelope.
Better put them in the safe. Crichton, will you pick them up in the morning? Take them to the War Office vaults?
Certainly, Colonel Yates.
Listening outside the library door, Valdar steps to the glass double doors leading to the entryway and closes them. He turns to the hats, gloves, and cane on a side table and picks them up. As he returns to the library doors, he drops a pair of the gloves. Bending down to pick them up, he listens to Arthur reviewing the documents.
All these materials get across the channel safely?
Without a hitch.
Not stored close to any other munitions depot, are they?
No, sir. There's too great a concentration to take any chances.
Oh, sir.
Valdar steps across the foyer as Helena comes down the stairs.
Valdar?
He looks up at her passively.
Oui, mademoiselle.
Glancing down, she knocks her shoe heel against a stair, loosening it.
The heel on my shoe seems to be loose. I want to fix it for
her. Of course, mademoiselle.
As she sits in a chair at the bottom of the stairs, he sets down the visitor's things and bends down to her shoe.
You didn't tell me what my duties are.
He tends to her shoe.
You will visit the office of Bennett at least twice a week. There you will find his secretary, Miss Riston. She and Kurtz are handle Coast Patrol information.
I don't know Kurtz.
You will. You are familiar with Wolfgang telegraphic code?
Perfectly.
He taps code on her shoe, and she decodes.
Deutschland über alles.
Good. As a rule, there are people in Bennett's office. So in case it is not empty, Miss Risdon will click off the information on the keys of her typewriter.
I understand.
I may have work for you tonight. Colonel Yates, head of the British Intelligence Department, is in the library with Monsieur Bennett.
He stands.
I think that below now. And dinner will be served at 8 precise.
Thank you.
As Helena gets up and walks away, Valdar goes into the kitchen. He reaches for a milk pitcher on a counter and peers into it. With a cloth, he cleans out the residue of the empty pitcher. Then he leaves with it via the back stairs. Later, in a park, a milkman pours milk into children's cups. Valdar approaches the milkman's cart as he finishes tending to the children, who run off one by one with their cups.
Good afternoon, sir.
Bonjour, monsieur.
We have one quart extra today.
All right, sir.
The milkman scoops milk into Valdar's pitcher.
Fräulein Helene arrive?
Oui. This afternoon.
Ah, that is good. Is there any further information about the MERS offensive?
So far, nothing.
Ah, we must know the exact location of the MERS munition dumps.
I think I have that for you tonight.
Good.
Late that night, a fire burns in the library fireplace, not far from a wall safe that Valdar opens and searches with a flashlight. He flips through some pages and finds the plans for the Muse munitions dump. He looks toward the noise carefully and listens. Then he returns to studying the plans. When a door opens, Valdar hurries to get the plans back in the safe and closes it. He hides behind a chair, but the intruder's candle illuminates him. Helena holds it. He approaches her and blows out the candle.
What are you doing here?
I found out there were some important papers in that safe.
So?
I thought you should have them. I wanted to get them for you.
Mademoiselle will pardon when I need help, I ask for it. You go back upstairs.
I'm sorry, you misunderstood.
Go at once.
Her face lit by the flickering in the fireplace. She accepts her reprimand and turns away. In the dark, she leaves the library and heads back up the stairs. Behind her, the front door opens and closes. A light switched on, and she spins on the stairs to find Arthur entering the foyer.
Good evening, Mr. Bennett.
Oh, hello.
Valdar freezes in the library. As Arthur approaches her, Valdar hides behind a door to listen.
My dear, what are you doing down here at this time of night?
I came after a book. I couldn't sleep. I just can't realize that I'm free.
I understand. But you'd better run along upstairs, you know, you'll catch cold.
I'm so tired, I just can't rest.
You must try. You'll be yourself again in a few days. Good night, my dear.
Good night.
Arthur's about to enter the library when Helena drops her book and collapses, drawing his attention away from where Valdar hides.
Here.
Arthur bends down to her.
What is it?
I'm so sorry. I guess I am exhausted. I'll be all right now.
You poor child. Come along, I'll take you upstairs.
He helps her up.
That isn't necessary. Really, it isn't.
No more arguments.
As Arthur escorts her up the stairs,
very kind of you.
Valdar listens from behind the open door. He steps out into the foyer, making sure they're well away upstairs. Noticing something at his feet, he bends and picks up the book Helena had dropped. He looks after her, smiling, and salutes. Soon after, Valdar steps outside to a service gate just as the milkman passes by and pauses beside a postbox. Valdar opens the gate and walks past him.
Evening, Governor.
Good evening, Monsieur.
He posts some mail.
Nice night, ain't it?
Oui, Monsieur. It is a very nice night.
Then he slips him an envelope.
Good night, Governor.
Back through the gate. Valdar closes it as the milkman walks off and soon approaches a house for sale. Pausing on the sidewalk, the milkman looks around. Then he enters the house, where another man stands.
What's the noise?
Plenty. We have a copy of the latest English plans. Come on. Start the generators.
Yellow.
Taking the plans from the envelope Valdar gave him, the milkman stands beside the other man, who sits before a radio set and starts the generator. He sends a coded message along the wires and through the air. Soon after, a German officer enters a radio room. The technician finishes writing the message.
Then this message is decoded, sir.
Well? Preparatory to a wide advance, the Allies have concentrated large stores of munitions at Pont Noir.
Send word to all air troops. That munition stock must be destroyed.
The technician returns to his desk to carry out the order. Later, a squadron of German planes speeds above the land. Bombs are held tight under their wings. The lead pilot looks down over the sprawling munitions dump. Pulling a lever, he drops his first bomb, which obliterates one of the buildings. His comrades start dropping their bombs. One knocks out a line of storage carts. Another is dropped on a train and the bridge above it. Another falls on the munitions factory. Massive explosions break apart huge sections of the compound. Workers are trapped on crumbling platforms and in buildings that collapse around them. So, things seem to be going just as planned for Helena, Valdar, and Strindler. But are all of these spies really on the same team? Many more twists to come next time on Movies for the Blind. For more information and links about the movies, about description, and how to subscribe, check out the blog, moviesfortheblind.com, where you can also find out about this podcast's Creative Commons license. The movies are from the Internet Archive, which is also the host for this podcast, so please support universal access to human knowledge by visiting and donating at www.archive.org. Thank you for downloading and for listening. Be back next week. Take care.